Well, good morning, TNC family. On this second Sunday in December, 17 days, 408 hours before Christmas, where today here I want to talk with you from the scriptures about these 408 hours. And I want to start with this. Imagine you are on a football team, because this is a very exciting time for college football with the upcoming playoffs, and these are the weeks of the final playoff push for NFL teams. So, imagine you are on a football team, and the quarterback calls you to the huddle. You're on the field, and he says, "Okay, guys, here's the plan. No plan. Just hike it. Sometime, anytime, in your own time. And guys, after that, just do whatever pleases you, whatever you like in the moment, at your own pace. Why are you still standing here? Let's mosey on up to the line of scrimmage." Imagine that. And if you are, you should be imagining defeat, injury, frustration, disappointment, and a post-game press conference where, when asked why the game went so poorly, you just say, "Well, we had no plan." Because without a plan, you will receive, but you will not achieve. Because anything you achieve in life is achieved by having a plan to achieve it. I mean, you graduated from school because you followed a plan. You're wearing clothes manufactured according to a plan. The car that you drive was built by a design and a plan. The grocery stores you shop in are laid out with a plan. The chair you sit in was planned. The bed you sleep in, the home you live in exists because of a plan. You read books, watch movies, use smartphones that were put together by plan. Anything that you achieve in life is achieved because of a plan. Even Santa understands this at Christmas, which is why he's been making a list and checking it twice. Why? Because he plans to come to your town and needs to know if you've been naughty or nice. Famously, by the way, one year after the weather conditions took a turn for the worst, one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa had to modify his plan. "Rudolph, new plan, won't you guide my sleigh tonight?" Because wise folks have a plan. But then, when conditions take a turn, instead of complaining about it or crying about it, they prepare to modify it. All of which leads to this question: what are your plans, TNC, for these next 408 hours? Even more, have you considered what God's plans might be for you during the coming days? And even more than that, do you believe your plans and God's plans are aligned? Because I believe the divine has a plan for you during the next 408 hours and beyond. And I don't really mean a specific play-by-play, moment-by-moment, "You are just my puppet" plan. I do mean this: a plan to help you see that every day, the presence of God and the kingdom of God is available to you, and you can choose to come into alignment with it or not. You can come into the divine huddle, if you will, and then come into alignment with the divine plan. But it's not inevitable that you will follow the divine plan, because others have plans for you too and call you into their huddle, other people, other powers. And it goes all the way back to the first Christmas, this tension. Luke chapter 2, verse 1. "In those days, Caesar Augustus had a plan, issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world, and so everyone went to his own town to register. These are the plans of a man named Caesar Augustus, who, 2,000 years ago, was the most powerful man in the world, whose given name was Octavian, but he was called Caesar Augustus, which meant the divine Caesar, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords. And Octavian had a plan for what would turn out to be the first Christmas, which was to consider, count, reflect on, expand, and celebrate his own family, his own agenda, net worth, accomplishments, influence, and power. And so everyone would have to report to their hometown to be counted, including a young couple, Mary and Joseph, expecting a child any day." That's right, this man, this Roman emperor, this absolute self-inflated leader lifts his finger at the capital, and 1,500 miles away in a small outpost, a poverty-stricken couple undertakes a dangerous journey at the whim of a king. Only, notice the result, verse 7, "While they were there, the time came for the baby to be born, and Mary gave birth to her firstborn, a son. She wrapped him in cloths and placed him in a manger because there was no room for him in the inn. And turns out, listen to this, the child is born in a little town that just happens to be the town mentioned in an ancient Hebrew prophecy 800 years before about the coming of a Messiah, Micah chapter 5. But you, Bethlehem, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel, whose origins are from old, from ancient times, and he will be a man of peace. The prophecy says that God's plan is that a Messiah would be born in Bethlehem. Now, there's a problem, which was, according to Luke, Joseph and Mary don't live in Bethlehem. In fact, they never would have gone to Bethlehem if it were not for Caesar's decree. So imagine if I could, like, interview Caesar right here, right now, live on this TNC podcast. Caesar, welcome. Thanks for meeting with me. Love your salad, by the way. And I'm not the one who suggested calling your pizza little. I voted for big, Caesar's. But I really, and thanks for coming, I just have one question, Caesar. Whose plan was carried out that first Christmas? Whose will was being done when you ordered the census? Who is responsible for Jesus being born in Bethlehem? And I imagine this would be Caesar's reply. It was because of me that Mary and Joseph went to Bethlehem. I made the call. My plans were being carried out. But Luke, in the biography, raises a question in the text. Was there only one plan underway that first Christmas season? Because God was at work too. Because God is at work too, even amid your life twists and turns that seem out of control. And what Luke is trying to expose here in the text is the illusion where you or I might say, I'm under the thumb of somebody else's plans. I'm not in control of my own. What Luke is trying to unveil is that what is happening in your world right now, it may not be your preference, not even God's preference. Somebody else or something else might be exerting their power, but even when this world's Caesars bring unwelcome things into your life and into your schedule, you can still journey with God and come into alignment with the plans of God. Because what Luke wants us to know is that there is another, more beautiful, more unselfish force at work who has plans too. There really is a divine dimension, a divine presence in our world, and you in this season really can be visited by that spirit of peace amid grief, of honesty, generosity, and energy, amid lies, greed, and discouragement, and it can guide you to do things not yet done, beautiful, wonderful things you didn't think you had in you. There really is a divine plan, but you and I will have to come into alignment with it because the divine is never going to force its plan on you. You and I will have to take some time to meditate, pray, listen, consider, put pen to paper, notes to smartphone for these days ahead. For your time and your words and your money, your ears, your hands, your feet. Because without considering what that greater plan might be, we might end up sleepwalking through these next days, obeying the whims of a plan made by a combination of other folks wanting to count us as part of their kingdom. So, what I want to do now is give you two quick principles for a good plan in the coming days. There's probably more principles, but I just want to give you two today. And they come from a passage in Isaiah chapter 9, beginning in verse 2, where he writes, "The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned." They were aware of the darkness, Isaiah says, but then they looked to the light. And that's going to be our plan, first to see the darkness, to be aware of the darkness, but then second, to move toward the light. First, see the darkness. Because there will always be some darkness to see. It will actually never go away. I'm telling you, I've been a pastor long enough to know that darkness isn't going to disappear. There's going to be a fear, a failure, a financial hardship, a loneliness, a debilitating illness, a death, not being able to quit a habit, not having a clear purpose, not having a full life, not seeing your kids or grandkids like you'd like, having a secret, an embarrassment, a hard relationship. The Franciscan priest and author Richard Rohr talks about how we need to learn to recognize what is, in fact, darkness. Partly because often we missee darkness as light, a seduction of the kingdoms of this world, he says. So he says, you need to sit in the dark and name it and make sure it's darkness. And then he says, don't run from it, rather pay attention to it first, because in the process of naming the darkness, you will put boundaries on it. You will clarify it and define it. Second, because when you know that you're in the dark, it's only then that you can even see the sliver of light that you need to move toward. This is why, for example, when I'm watching TV in the middle of the day, I sometimes have to close the blinds to make it dark in the room, to get rid of the unnecessary, unwanted light in order to see the light of the screen that I want to see. This is why Barbara Brown Taylor, in her wonderful book, Learning to Walk in the Dark, talks about the need to see the darkness so you can walk in the direction of what's beautiful and good, the sacred light. This is why John's Gospel, he writes, chapter 1, the light shines into the darkness, and the darkness will not overcome it. This is why Christmas, the birth of the light of the world, came at a time when the people of God were, Isaiah says, walking in darkness. The people walking in darkness have seen a light. Here's the plan. See the dark, name your darkness, because it will allow you to see the light. And here's a quick plan for how you can see the darkness. Some evening this week, pick a spot and literally sit, maybe even in the physical dark, and prayerfully dwell on the real life darkness you are walking through now. Dwell on it, name it, write it down, define it, give it boundaries, and then pay attention and look for the sliver of light, for the whispers of God, for the promptings of Scripture, for an idea, to reach out to a friend or a person of wisdom or a resource that can bring you a sliver of light. But number one, we must learn to see the darkness. Which leads to number two. Second, follow the sliver of light that will emerge. Follow the sliver of light, because we do not just sit and think ourselves into the light. Rather, we will live ourselves into new ways of thinking and being, which is part of the testimony of the wise men in the Christmas story, because they actually get up and follow the sliver of light, light from just one star in the night sky. Just one star was enough to bring them all the way to the manger. Just a sliver of light. To quote Barbara Brown Taylor again, you really can learn to walk in the dark, and it's okay when you can't see two steps in front of you. Just take one. This reminds me again of that great story from Anne Lamott in her book Bird by Bird, where she writes about growing up with her older brother, who was 10 years old at the time, and he was trying to get a report written for school on birds that he'd had 3 months to write, but which was due the next day. She writes, quote, we were out at our family cabin in Bolinas, and my brother was at the kitchen table close to tears, surrounded by binder paper and pencils and unopened books about birds, immobilized by the hugeness of the task ahead. Then my father sat down beside him, put his arm around my brother's shoulder, and said, bird by bird, buddy. Just take it bird by bird. Start out with chickadees and then move to the pelicans. And little by little by little, bird by bird, something will kind of use you to get itself written. And I love that TNC, because when you tell a child to go clean her room and you walk her upstairs and she sees the entire mess and she says, I can't, then just say, yes, you can, bird by bird, toy by toy, sock by sock. Yes, you can, build muscle, curl by curl, sit up by sit up. Yes, you can lose weight, pound by pound. Yes, you can save money, dollar by dollar. Yes, you can deal with the grief of that loss, day by day, or sometimes hour by hour. Yes, you can learn to play that instrument or hit that baseball, note by note, pitch by pitch, bird by bird. And then all of a sudden you look up, and in the process of bird by bird, the process itself uses you, and you get to someplace beautiful. Lamott says elsewhere that she has learned that living well is like driving at night with the headlights on. You can only see a little ways in front of you, but you can make the whole journey that way. I love that metaphor, because so often I want to know where I'm going to end up. and what I'm going to see along the way, how I'll feel at each stage, and when I'm going to get to my destination. But mostly, life just doesn't work that way. Mostly, it'll be keep waking up in moments where the light is far from obvious. Keep walking in the darkness, following the star, that sliver of light. Here's what that might look like. I will commit to being faithful to church on Sunday mornings because there's a sliver of light there. I will pay attention to the walking shoes by my front door because there's a sliver of light in them. An appointment with a counselor, there's a sliver. A deposit in a bank account, there's a sliver. Showing up for that support group meeting, there's a sliver. Ah, the crack of a smile in a child, there's a sliver. The hope in that face, the hint of somebody in need that I can serve even while I'm still walking in darkness. That curiosity, that idea, that hint, the chorus of that carol, the following of that clue. Watch where the hints lead. Watch where the slivers lead. Matthew chapter 2, verse 9. The star the wise men had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star stop, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. They opened their treasure chests and gave him presents, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. The wise men were 1,500 miles away from the house they left from, but they were not far from home. In fact, they were finally home. TNC, during these next 408 hours, will you define your darkness, but then follow the light? Isaiah chapter 9, the people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. And that's the divine plan, to bring hope into despair, peace into conflict, light amid the darkness. That's the divine plan. I say we come into alignment with it this season. Will you pray with me? God, I pray now for every person listening. And I pray for not only them, but for their families and for their places of work. I pray for our city, our country, our world. I pray for our church. I pray for a clear-eyed awareness of what is dark, and then for spiritual eyes to see the light of dawn that your presence will bring. And now, TNC, I pray that the Lord would bless you and keep you, would make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you, would turn his face toward you and give you peace. Amen.